Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 23 from Canto 9, Chapter 10. Evam shapam dadushi sanditam utsasarja. Banam savajram ivatan dridhayam bibeda. So srigvaman dasha mukhair napatad vimanad. Daheti jalpati jane sukriti variktaha. Evam shipantanushi sanditam utsasarja. Banam savajram ivatad dritayam bibeda. So srigvamanda shamukhair nyapatad vimanad. Daheti jalpati jane sukriti variktaha. Translation: after thus rebuking Ravana, Lord Ramachandra fixed an arrow to his bow, aimed at Ravana, and released the arrow, which pierced Ravana's heart like a thunderbolt. Upon seeing this, Ravana's followers raised a tumultuous sound, crying, "Alas, alas, what has happened, what has happened?" As Ravana, vomiting blood from his 10 mouths, fell from his airplane. Just as a pious man falls to earth from the heavenly planets when the results of his pious activities are exhausted. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In Bhagavad Gita 9:21 it is said, Kshine punya marcha lokam vishanti. Translation, when the results of their pious activities are exhausted, those who have enjoyed in the heavenly planets fall again to earth. The fruitive activities of this material world are such that whether one acts piously or impiously, one must remain within the material world according to different conditions. For neither pious nor impious action can relieve one from Maya's clutches and repeated birth and death. Somehow or other, Ravana was raised to an exalted position as the king of a great kingdom with all material opulences, but because of his sinful act of kidnapping Mother Sita, all the results of his pious activities were destroyed. If one offends an exalted personality, especially the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one certainly becomes most abominable. Bereft of the results of pious activities, one must fall down like Ravana and other demons. It is therefore advised that one transcend both pious and impious activities and remain in the pure state of freedom from all designations. Sarvopadi vinir muktam tat paratvena nirmalam. When one is fixed in devotional service, he is above the material platform. On the material platform, there are higher and lower positions, but when one is above the material platform, is always fixed in a spiritual position. Sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Ravana, or those like him, may be very powerful and opulent in the material world, but theirs is not a secure position because, after all, they are bounded by the results of their karma. karmana daiva netrena. We should not forget that we are completely dependent on the laws of nature. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasya hankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. Translation: the bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by nature. One should not be proud of one's exalted position and act like Ravana, thinking oneself independent of material nature's laws. I find it noteworthy that in covering this subject matter, something that Srila Prabhupada could have done but didn't do is go into the details and details and the details to fill in the storyline. Sometimes he does like that, but this is a real capsule summary of Ramayana told in two chapters, and the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra are in volumes and volumes. So he could have, but he didn't, go into filling in the details, or some of the details, because they're quite interesting. Quite interesting. Like the Vibhishan informed Ramachandra when there wasn't victory, how to be victorious. So he roared Ramachandra, taking the assistance of Vibhishan, the Supreme Lord who's omniscient, took the assistance from his devotee, Vibhishan, and in so many ways took assistance from Vibhishan to understand how how Lanka was set up and where the ramparts were and where the soldiers lived and where this and that and the other thing. Vibhishan was, an intelligence expert because he had lived in Lanka for so long. Or so many other details. So many other details. The emphasis being given in the purport to the, as far as the storyline is concerned, is Ravana having stolen Sita. And from the previous purport and here, you can't defend the goddess of fortune. But the benedictions and the curses of Ravana play a big part in the storyline. The benedictions from Lord Shiva, the benedictions from Lord Brahma, made Ravana feel he's invincible. So that the benediction from Lord Brahma, for example, was that he could not be killed by this one, that one, the other one, the other one, the other one, the other one. But he, being proud, didn't include human beings, and therefore Lord Vishnu appeared when the demigods went to appeal to him. There's this nice section just during the ceremony that Rishyasringa was performing to have the benediction so that Dasarath could have sons. The demigods had gone to Lord Brahma to say, you made this promise that to Ravana that he could not be killed by us, and so he's harassing us, and please do something. You made this mistake. You gave this benediction, but I didn't say that he couldn't be killed by a human being. Lord Vishnu will appear as a human being. So it's in the storyline. There's details, and therefore, like for two classes that I've been giving in a row, the question about the human-like nature of Ram's pastimes and why are they so charming? Well, he appears human-like for, you know, multiple reasons, one of them being to fulfill, to uphold the word of Brahma. So he didn't appear in some extraordinary fashion. He appeared human-like. And in the human-likeness, he shows apparently human feelings, like lamentation, anger, apparent feelings that are apparently human-like. But so the details and the details and details are fabulous, very charming, very attractive. It makes the charm of Ramayana so attractive because it's like he's a hero. Like he's one of us, but a much better version of one of us. Yeah. Ideal in virtue and ideal in his conduct and ideal in every way, but seemingly human-like. So emphasis is given in the purport to defiling Sita, but the aside from the benedictions, the curses, the pronouncements, the utterances from different personalities that determined long, long ago that Ravana would be destroyed in the way that he was destroyed. There is prediction again and again and again, long ago, because of his abominable nature. That perhaps the pinnacle is kidnapping Sita, but the things that he did before kidnapping Sita are abominable. This one of them, there's so many, there's like six or seven specific curses. Vedavati, who was a daughter of a great personality living in a forest as Ravana was traveling in his Pushpaka Vimana and saw this young ascetic woman sitting, and he became curious, and then when he came, descended his Vimana and saw her, he became more than curious, he became overwhelmed in his lusty attraction for her, and he approached her in very explicit terms, and she in no explicit, in very explicit terms, told him, please be peaceful and go away. He grabbed her and was ready to violate her and by her hair. And she mystically cut her hair and said, I'm now going to leave my body in mystic fire and I will appear again and I will be the cause of your destruction. So his violation of others. And so without this going into that, certainly Prabhupada could have done so in the Bhaktivedanta purports. And it would, you know, it's very interesting and charming. And it emphasizes the point that he's making. You can't violate a devotee, or you can't violate women. And elsewhere, with Bhishma Dev, even your Bhishma Dev not protecting Draupadi, you're finished. So women are to be protected, and Ravana was a women exploiter. He was cursed a number of times. His reason for not violating... Anyway, the storyline is wonderful. The reason for not violating Sita is there was a curse that he had violated a celestial damsel. And hearing about that, an utterance was made that if he ever did so again, he would immediately die. His heads, 10 heads, would crack in 7 pieces. So he wasn't so sure whether it would happen or not, but he honored it. And others and others and others. Nala Kuvera's wife, when he went to challenge Kuvera, who was his half-brother, he, on the, in the encounter, he saw Kuvera's son, another Kuvera, saw his wife, and he violated her. And Nala Kuvera, when she came running to him, to her husband, saying what had happened, in terrible distress, he made a curse that you'll die for this violation at the hands of a woman. So, etc., etc., etc. He was heinous. He was atrocious. But to cap it all off, although advised again and again and again by wise advisors, he couldn't control himself because of his pride and lust. Gates to hell. And therefore, chine punya marcha lokam vishanti. As Prabhupada says in the purport, somehow or other Ravana was raised to an exalted position as the king of a great kingdom with all material opulences. He doesn't list the elements that made up how he rose to that position. It had to do with his father, born of an exalted, illustrious father, and trained, because his father was a Brahmana, trained by his father in Vedic knowledge and Vedic arts and so forth and so on. And great austerities and boons and benedictions, and so that he could do what he did was because of those boons and benedictions, and so he was out of control. And as we heard in yesterday's verse, saw that there wasn't anyone, any controller, Anishwaram, no controller above him to stop him. He's unchecked, unbridled viciousness because of his demoniac nature. So therefore, whatever merit that allowed him to come to that high position, his sinful activities, when his pious deeds had been exhausted, he fell. And that's the language of the verse, this last line. Sukriti eva riktaha. Sukriti is pious merit. Riktaha, finished. When one's pious merit is finished, it's finished by sinful activities or time or both. He fell, and he fell from his vimanat. So there's paintings of this image of Ravana being, his chest being pierced by the arrow of Ram, one of the celestial weapons that he had received from Vishwamitra Muni. Of course, he's the source of everything. He doesn't need celestial weapons from anybody. But the paintings don't show the Vimana, but very clearly here in the Bhagavatam, at least, the version we're hearing from Shukadeva Goswami, as he was on this Pushpaka Vimana, his cherished toy. Extremely powerful. But in contrast, or in face of the power of the Supreme Lord, Ram, like an insect, although appearing invincible. So the emphasis that Prabhupada is making in the purport is guiding us. No harm to go into the details of the storyline, because they're also instructive. But he is just focusing on the instruction. Never offend an exalted personality, especially the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One certainly becomes most abominable, bereft the results of pious activities. One must fall down. So Very valuable instruction. We're very, very cautious about offending exalted personalities. And then the next message is, don't take shelter of pious or impious activities. That's another Bhagavad Gita message. Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Purna Arvartan Urjana. They're temporary. Piety takes one up, impiety takes one down. They're temporary. Don't simply listening to a lecture this morning of Prabhupada speaking in London about for the most part people are seeking happiness and the standard of happiness is diminishing distress and increasing sense gratification. So disturbance of the senses or the circumstances of around us is a preoccupation and seeking happiness of the senses instead. That's the material position. So the advice is don't fall prey to the material position, including the path of piety that enables one to go to a higher position of enjoyment and a lesser position of misery. It's a fool's paradise. It's to be advised against, because at some point, chine punya marcha lokam vishanti. Rather, one should aspire for the spiritual position. And in that spiritual position, the Brahma-Bhuta position, he's making reference to this 14:26 Bhagavad Gita verse, where immediately at once, Sagunan Samatityaitan Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, through the process of bhakti, the potency is there to go beyond piety, impiety into the realm of transcendence where the modes of nature cannot touch, and the potency is there to not pull one back. Of course, there's a problem, and that is we have affinity for matter. That is the problem. Trying to be the enjoyer, the material spirit of trying to be the enjoyer of Krishna's energy. That's a big bungee cord holding us to the material situation. But the potency is there in bhakti itself to cut that. Chindanti kovidas tasya, the knot of material affinity. So that's the advocacy. He's taking the storyline, little portion of the storyline of Ramayana, the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, to instruct us what we should be aspiring for, to be situated in the position of bhakti and pure devotion to the personality of Godhead. Anything else? He's writing, just following the purport. It's insecure position where we're bound by karma and we're bound by our affinity for matter by the modes of nature. And instead of trying to be the enjoyer of the modes of nature, his concluding message is we should recognize, never forget that we're dependent. Ultimately, we're dependent upon Krishna, but we're dependent upon the laws of material nature. Now, if Krishna so desires, he can lift one above the laws of material nature, the bondage of karma being a primary one. By the mercy of Krishna, one can go beyond that. But otherwise, kartaham iti manyate, ahankara vimudhatma, kartaham iti manyate, one is bound by prakriti. Thinking in terms of false ego. There was a devotee just the other day asked this question. We're the non-doer. Bhagavad Gita teaches us that we're the non-doer. So since we're the non-doer, how can we be held accountable for things that we do because we're the non-doer? Well, we're held accountable, although we're the non-doer, because of acting through false ego, thinking that we're the doer, then we're bound by that law, the karma law. And if you let go of the mentality of thinking that you're the doer, then instead you're the instrument of Krishna. You're doing some service and making some sacrifice to Krishna. There's no karmic bondage. Same activity, different consciousness behind the activity, you're not bound. In either case, we're not the doer. We discussed this yesterday, partly the reason for going into this. Those five factors of action. One of them is karta. That's the doer or the worker, the performer. So we certainly have a part to play. And not only that we're there, but there's another part. We make some endeavor, cheshta. So there's two parts. We're there, and we make some endeavor. Supposing you're there, but you don't make an endeavor. Nothing happens. You have to make an endeavor to get up and walk across the room. In order to walk across the room, for activity to happen, some endeavor. Then there's another three factors. But so we have a part to play, but the message is we're dependent. We can't do without the other three. And ultimately, all four are under the jurisdiction of Daiva. And so the position of transcendence, the advocacy that Bhagavad Gita is teaching, and as Prabhupada is taking this opportunity of this particular event with Ravana falling from his airplane, being pierced by the arrow of Lord Ramachandra that entered into his heart like a thunderbolt from his bow, fixing an arrow to his bow and having him finished, blood vomiting from his 10 mouths, and the followers going, alas, alas, what has happened? What has happened? Well, as Ramchandra said, you're fit for punishment, I'm going to punish you. And he lost it. He lost everything. Similar to what Prahlad says about not wanting a kingdom, because although the kingdom is something that people of this world strive for, like sacrifice their life for, to become a leader of something or other. I saw within a moment that my father, Hiranyakashipu, who had all of this opulence and kingdom and power, in a moment he lost it all. So why would I want that? That's intelligent. You know, but intelligence goes to sleep if the spirit of ahankara tells us we should try to be the enjoyer of the temporary. So it's a very beautiful, artful way of living, to live a life of devotion in whatever the situation may be. High position, low position, or any position, and accept it as Krishna's mercy and engage in trying to please Krishna as much as we can. And there's plenty of opportunity. There's plenty of tribulation. That's also an opportunity of staying fixed in the position of being in Krishna's service. I'll just end with this. There's a Chanakya Pandit saying that Bhadri Narayan Swami likes a lot. And that is, as yata tata, as gold is tested by fire and rubbing on stone, so the character of a man is understood through how he responds to tribulation. And there's a similar statement in relation to, it's in the Krishna book. It's almost the same, just different context, but the same idea. Where after the Bhrigu Muni story, where Bhrigu was sent by the demigods, or by the sages, excuse me, to go see who is supreme, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. And Shiva is supreme because he, although kicked in the chest, a corporeal offense, takes no offense. In fact, the opposite, I must have hurt your foot, my chest is very hard. I'm so sorry. So, Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, it's not in the Bhagavatam commentary, but the greatness of a man, same idea, the greatness of a man can be measured by how he responds to difficult circumstances or challenges, or how when somebody offends you, how you respond. Now, Ramachandra here is acting as the ideal king. He's the personality of Godhead in the role of the ideal king, and he's not just saying, well, you kidnapped Sita, but you know, I'll tolerate. It's a sinful activity that as a king and a husband, he has the duty, the right, and the duty. And so he does. And of course there's the bigger picture of responding to the appeal of the demigods to relieve the universe, not just Earth, from this wicked person, unstoppable because of benedictions of Brahma and Shiva and his austerities. But all of that's taken away. Okay, so any discussion or questions? Yes.
I'm wondering about the doership.
Yeah.
In the verse being under the modes of nature, okay. You're not the doer. I'm wondering about when you're not under the modes of nature or within the realm of devotional service, there's some doership, or is there still no doership in devotional service?
Your question is, in devotional service, is there doership? And if, okay. Well, a short answer is, according to the consciousness of the performer of devotional service, it depends, yes or no. In the beginning stage, there's a mix. We're doing things for Krishna. Here we are. We could be doing something else. We're doing this for Krishna. And there's something on the other side. We still have false ego operating in our lives, and we still therefore think of ourselves as the doer. So it's a mix. Now, I don't know if it's part of your question. Just what does that mean, that we're kind of bound by karma of what we do in devotional service? You didn't ask that question, but the potency of bhakti is such that it dissolves that. That's my understanding. We're not accruing further karma because we have a mix of bhakti and material consciousness going on. Rather, the power of bhakti acts greater or lesser depending upon our affinity for Krishna, the goal, being in Krishna's service. It's even this verse, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochatina Kangsati Samaksarveshu Bhuteshu Madbhattim Labhate Pram. It's a different verse than this one, but there's an alternating position between, let's say, somebody that comes in the door and they're not a sadhaka, but they have some, like the man that came this morning from Mangalarti, spent a few minutes, made some offering and stayed a bit for Mangalarti. You weren't here, you were in the kitchen, and then left. 4:30 in the morning. Now, that's a special soul. And in the position of such a soul, Most likely, there's some understanding that this is going to bring some pious merit to me. And in, with that pious merit that comes to me, I will something. I will get the fruits of that piety. My life will be better. Prosperity, set, whatever, the desirable things. And then after this life, a better life. Most people have that, Krishna says, and it's true, have that mentality. Now, there's a mix, because he's coming to Krishna. He could do it in his home, but he has some additional faith that Krishna is in the temple. Exactly what Prabhupada says about... So, there's gradations without going through the whole rainbow of gradations. There's gradations. And so, such a person is the fire of bhakti is operating less in his life than yours. And the fire of bhakti in yours is operating less than someone who is in the Shuddha Bhakti position, or the Bhava Bhakti position, or the Ruchi position, or whatever. It's the same bhakti, it's just operating to a greater or lesser degree. We're not accruing new karma unless one deviates into that area of sin or offense. And the result of sin or offense is it just blocks the power of bhakti, particularly offense. But we have to be very careful. That's the message here. That address your question? More. Okay, keep going.
More so asking about like the pure platform of bhakti and what
the purifying power, yeah.
Like pure devotional service, someone who's completely purified, their perspective, are they think like when they're doing something, is it more of like they're controlled by bhakti and then they're more of like an observer? There's no doership. They don't feel that they're doing anything.
When you say they, who is they?
So, a pure devotee.
A pure devotee. Oh. Now ask your question again, because I wasn't sure who they were, who you were referring to, the pronoun.
So, yeah, when a pure devotee is engaging in service, are they more, their perspective is more seeing themselves as an observer, and they're under the control of bhakti or the
well, it depends on the stage. Let's take, you know, the Cowherd Boys. They're not processing like that. They're not thinking of themselves as an observer. Depends on the stage of the life of a pure devotee. And let's take the position of Prabhupada. He came to the position of a madhyama, because madhyamas preach from the uttama position. So his consciousness is up here, but he's taking the position of someone that's not up there. So he was able to speak in such a way that, you know, there was detachment, conscious detachment, but at the same time, you know, deeply invested in giving the gift to an audience who he knew what their problems were. It was a madhyama function from an uttama position. Very merciful. Most merciful. So it depends. Now he could have just stayed in that uttama position and be engaged in his eternal service with Krishna. He performed this other function consciously by the instruction of his spiritual master to do so. And that was the force of his life, the mission of his life, the instruction of his spiritual master, fulfilling that. And that was the power, that was the purity of his devotion. There wasn't anything else in his, you know, there was no selfishness. Just service. Loving service. Powerful. And the power is still being felt so many years after his departure. We were appreciating this just yesterday, reading with some devotees. It's not just some verses, Krishna's entering Dwarka, and the description of Krishna and his form and his exchanges and his loving dealings and the feelings of the devotees and the way that Prabhupada describes it. It's just out of this world. And he wanted to give that to the world. And he did, with great sacrifice, and made arrangements for that to be translated in so many languages and encouraged us to make it available to people and, you know, printing the purposes of ISKCON. He could have just stayed in Vrindavan. What a gift to the world from a pure devotee. He wasn't just an observer. He was fully invested in the descending mercy and being the conduit for that descending mercy. You've heard me say this before, most likely. One time Prabhupada was in Los Angeles in his room. He had just come from the airport and went to his room. So the devotees were gathered around just after his arrival, saying something to the effect that, I know that my disciples, they're always discussing my activities. Prabhupada is now in India, and these are his activities. And then he went to Japan, and these were his activities in Japan. And then he went to Australia and New Zealand, and these exchanges and those activities. Then he went to Hawaii, and now he's in Los Angeles. I know you're discussing these things all the time, but please know, I'm always with Krishna in Vrindavan. He's fully conscious. I mean, he didn't say stuff like that so often, but on that occasion he did. He was moved by love. For his, not only his disciples, just people he didn't even know. Because he's a pure devotee. Okay. You're on.
Sometimes we find unwanted situation. Unwanted situation. Unwanted.
Hanuman?
Means something.
Unwanted?
Yeah, unwanted situation.
We find ourselves in an unwanted situation.
Then what happens, immediately because of our mode of ignorance, we immediately react. Although we don't want to face that situation, but how to react? How to tolerate?
Mode of goodness. Start with. Pause. Mode of goodness is you reflect, and when you reflect, who am I? I'm a spirit soul. I'm meant to be in Krishna's service. Here's a circumstance, unwanted, that Krishna has put me in. How can I best serve him? Starts with, rather than being in the reactive to the external, you go into the reflective, mode of goodness, not moved by knowledge and super soul. So super soul can then guide you. If you just turn to him and my dear Lord Krishna, this is such and such circumstance. How can I best serve you? Because that's who I am. I'm your servant. And you're giving me an opportunity to serve you. It's not what I would have chosen, but what you've given to me to serve you. How can I best serve you? You may not have an answer, but it's a protection against reaction and acting out of impulse and the modes of nature. And you then, because by doing that, you become part of the material energy. You buy into the waves and whirlpools of the material energy. So don't, you know, pause. Reflect. My dear Lord Krishna, how can I best serve you? Yes, Jitendra?
Like you were saying, Aranyakakishipu and Prahlad, and I always remember that Prabhupada would say, he said, they don't see the time factor.
They don't see the?
Time factor. What's
time
that?
Fixer?
Time factor.
Time factor.
Yeah. So I thought that was just kind of correlated with that phrase that Prabhupada
Yeah, time used. Brings things and destroys things.
Yeah.
It's inexorable. You can't stop it. Time and tide.
I remember hearing Karma Yoga is doing what you want to do for Krishna. Bhakti Yoga, I believe Prabhupada said, is what I want you to do for Krishna. When people would first come, he said, what would you like to do for Krishna?
It's there's a little more to it than that, but that's fine. Subal?
Guru Maharaj, I wanted to ask you, the Ramayana is a narrations of is focused on the past tense of the personality of Godhead, Lord Ramachandra. When Srila Vyasadev, or in comparison with the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavatam is the Amala Purana, so is just pure devotional service, the narrations of that. Is that Ramayan has also the mixed things of Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, and Upasana Kanda, the devotional part?
Well, I'm not sure what your question is, but there's certainly reference to those activities. Like, for example, the pastimes of Ramachandra take place during a yuga where yajna is the means of achieving perfection. And so when Dasarath, who is a pure devotee, wishes to have a son, he turns to his priests to assist him. So, you know, he wants to perform an Ashvamedha Yajna. So that's Karmakanda. For the purpose of having a son. But he's a pure devotee, so why is he doing that? So is that there's elements. But when he takes that, it's with the mood of pure devotion. It's not with the mood of an ordinary person who does something that's karmakanda in order to fulfill material desire.
Yeah, I was thinking more from the perspective of Vyasadev compiling the Mahabharata, his satisfaction and then the instructions from Narada Muni that you haven't sufficiently glorified the personality of Godhead, and then the Bhagavatam, you know, then he instructed to compile the Bhagavatam. And the Bhagavatam then becomes the scripture that gives, you know, that the Amala Purana, the unadulterated. So just as the Mahabharata which also narrates, you know, the past tense of Krishna, is not on the same level of the Bhagavatam. Can we say the same thing with the Ramayana?
No.
Okay. That was my question.
Okay. Anything over here? Going once. I think some more. Frame the question. You're not sure how to say that what the question is. That's the look I'm getting.
over here, in this particular verse, you know, you were pointing to Sharan Praswami to the fact that Srila Prabhupada was particularly highlighting the instruction that's to be drawn from the sort of abbreviated narration.
So appreciation that, of what?
From the abbreviated version of the narration.
The ages?
sorry, I'll try again, Sharan Paraswami. you were drawing attention to the fact that in this abbreviated version of the Ramayana, Sukadev Goswami is speaking just certain, in a much more condensed form, the Ramayana.
Yes.
Srila Prabhupada, and you were drawing attention to the fact that Srila Prabhupada, instead of filling in details, he's actually highlighting the instruction that comes. So, in this particular case, Ravana's piety, or if, you know, whatever pious credits he'd had, were immediately ended by his offense through the kidnapping of Mother Sita. So sometimes, you know, if you look at it from a different point of view, a person coming with their particular mix of piety and impiety may in fact come to perform appear to take shelter of the deities in some way, but at the same time a person may be very much attached to some very impious activity or a very impious lifestyle. So if one were extrapolating from this pastime, then one could take it that that piety and impiety it comes to an end just because of turning to the deities, just like in Ravana's case, the piety and impiety came to an end by Lord Ramachandra's will to annihilate him or kill him. So I guess the question is, if somebody is predominantly living an impious kind of life, then does that person have some opportunity to still, you know, move to a more transcendental plane just by virtue of visiting a temple?
Between the acoustics of this room and my half deafness, and I'm not used to hearing her voice. Can you, please pardon me, can you help me understand what she's asking?
She's asking that that a person, that the impious life of a person can be finished or can
changed?
Be changed, or in one sense, you know, cut or finish just by the fact of coming to take darshan of the deities with, you know, like that.
Can someone's past impiety be cut just by coming to take darshan of the deity? That's the question. And continue impiety. Ah. Well, same answer, similar answer as I gave to Giridhari. There's even the cutting is proportionate to the devotion. And certainly their continuing impiety makes them dirty again. You know, the and it is connected to one of the 10 offenses, where one continues sinful activities on the strength of chanting as an offense against the holy name. But supposing one comes to the temple to relieve oneself of the burden of one's past sins, knowing that the potency is there, and the idea of, then I will also prosper in this life and the next. And that's my formula for continuing with my sinful activities. That's an offense. And so that the offense diminishes or blocks the power of bhakti. And one, blocking the power means one will not get the full effect. And even in terms of the cutting, one will not get the full effect. But the potency is there. So it's proportionate to. And the mediating factor is aparad. The offense that the anartha that arises in the heart that serves as a blocking of the power of bhakti. For that person that does what you said and continues with their sinning. There's certainly some mitigation, some relief, but not full because of offense. And the benefit certainly is everlasting, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, and little by little by little, that accumulation of the everlasting benefit may come to the point of taking another step in the direction of, I want to get rid of this sin or the tendency for sin. You know, anyway, so it's gradual, but it can be at once. So the at once is the commitment or the explicit shelter taking in the mood of, I simply want my life to be pleasing to you. Then it's not a business, it's a devotion. Similar to what Jitendriya indicated.
Just reading that regret is a form of atonement.
Yes, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Tapa. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya.